Welcome in Line of Logic to the sweet spot for the Wells Fargo Championship. I'm your host, Mike Alexander, a.k.a. Rotowan. Joining me tonight, Alex Remezowski. What's going on, Alex?
What's up? Not much. Excited to be getting back into some real PGA, as interesting as last week could have been. It really just didn't do it for me, and I think the lack of DFS play may have contributed to that a bit. I don't know. What do you think about last week? You think they should keep doing it like that?
Yeah, you know, I'm always interested in different formats. It was really surprising that nobody put anything together. Even like PGA.com has its own fantasy side of its website, and they didn't even try to put something together. It's not hard. You pick five teams, you know, there's 80 teams, you pick five of them. You score it. Like it's a really easy thing to figure out. And, you know, they're leaving money and advertising on the table. So, we'll see if that changes next year.
It honestly blew my mind. Like I know I tweeted it out last week when I was sitting there with nothing else to do, but like the Dell Technologies, they're not the whatever was the match play earlier this year that DraftKings, that everything can throw something together for that format and somehow make it work. And like, honestly, like what's the difference? You're going to choose a team of players instead of one player, and we're all working with the same field and the same prices. So I don't know why it's so difficult for them to do, but they couldn't do it and life goes on.
Yeah, they literally don't even have to change the scoring. It's still eagles, birdies, pars, bogeys, doubles.
Yeah, like I was going through it in my head and I told myself the same thing. I was having a conversation with someone else and I was like, there's nothing different about this. They're playing even no matter if it's best ball, they're going to do the scoring with the best ball score. If it's alternate shot, it's still a birdie or a par or a bogey on every hole. Someone comes in first, second, third, fourth, fifth, like whatever. Right. I don't know.
They probably freaked a little bit from a pricing standpoint. Like, you know, they usually pull tournament history and recent performance. And, you know, being on a team kind of throws a wrench into that. But you spend, you know, 2 hours building a algorithm that you think covers yourself and makes it even and fair. Like, it doesn't have to be rocket science. So.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, you pay me $50 and give me a half a day and I will come up with some challenging pricing for that tournament. I promise you.
Just, you know, give me 10 free entries into the, to the four and we'll call it even.
Yeah, exactly. Find a fan. And like I said, we're all working with the same field too. So I guess that's all I'm going to say. But no matter what the pricing is, it doesn't matter because everyone has to play by that pricing. So,
right, exactly.
I don't know.
But anything notable to come out of there? There's a couple of miscuts that raised a few eyebrows.
Yeah, I mean, keeping it brief, I would say I will think about what happened last week very minimally well considering picks for this week, number one. Number two, I think in the future, I would probably stay away from this in any way possible. I guess if it's on Daily Fantasy, yes, I'll be making some lineups. You can bet on that. But from the names we see, the teams finishing in the top 10, top 15, it was pretty hard to predict. I mean, Billy Herschel and Scott Piercy ended up winning with their low round on Saturday. Billy Herschel's been on a bit of a heater, so whatever. Yeah, for sure. That's understandable. But I guess important things to highlight at this point would be the miscuts, like you said. I think I got four of them sitting right here in front of me. A couple of them very relevant to this week. Justin Thomas and Bud Cauley shot 70-70. They missed the cut. That is a bit surprising to me. They were honestly one of my favorites looking at the field. They were probably a lot of people's favorites.
Yeah.
Just because of JT, and then Bud Colley's been playing pretty well lately. So they missed the cut. Jordan Spieth and Ryan Palmer, another one of the groups I liked. I didn't put anything on them, but they were also minus four, missed the cut. And then Sergio and Rafa Cabrera Bello, that was a big surprise to me, but I guess it shouldn't be, seeing as Sergio has just like not been himself since the Masters. So those are probably three of the biggest. Then you got Wesley Bryan, John Rahm, which I thought was such a strange pairing. I don't know if they have like a history or they're friends. Mm-hmm. I wasn't aware of that, but I liked the team. Didn't work out for them. And then I guess the last notable thing would be Brooks Koepka came back from his injury. He's been out for some time now, and he played with Mark Ternasia. And I could have guessed this would happen, but they also missed the cut.
Yeah, not too encouraging for Koepka coming into this week. We'll get to him. He's down in the eights, I believe.
I would actually like to go back and take a closer look, because I didn't pay attention all that much. But in some of those holes, like the best ball, you can actually narrow it down to see exactly how he did. But and then Friday would have been alternate shot. So they shot 67, 78. So the alternate shot clearly did not go well for them.
Yeah, that hurt a lot of people. You know, there was guys hitting into the water, things like that.
Oh, yeah. Spieth and Palmer on Friday. I was caught those last few holes. They hit it in the water a couple times. Spieth tried to hit a bunker shot on the 18th hole that they pretty much needed to get up and down to make the cut. And Spieth, it was like a fried egg in there, but he left it right there in the bunker, and that was not a good look. But yeah, people were struggling on Friday with the alternate shot.
But all right, so let's jump into this week. We got a pretty good field, a lot of names back that we're used to seeing. The course is Quail's Hollow. It's been renovated in the last year here, maybe a little more than a year. They did away with some par fives, but it's still a really long course. So you go ahead and give your breakdown, Alex, and I'll give my thoughts at the end there.
All right, yeah. So we got the 2018 Wells Fargo Championship. Like you said, it's at Quail Hollow in North Carolina, Charlotte, North Carolina. It's over 7,500 yards, pushing 7,600 yards. It's a par 71 now. Used to be a par 72. The players, PGA Tour pros, are overall pretty familiar with this course. It's been on tour a long time. Last year, the Wells Fargo Championship was not played here because they held the PGA Championship here. We discussed this a little bit, but it's a long course. People are going to be looking at driving distance, at the bombers this week, in terms of some past winners. So we had Brian Harman last year in 2017, but this was not played at Quail Hollow last year. Rory McIlroy has won here twice. And then we had James Hahn in 2016, J.B. Holmes in 2014. Ricky Fowler won in 2012, Lucas Glover in 2011, and so Rory won in 15 and 10. I think some of the most notable parts of this course would be the length. The rough, not much to worry about. I think strokes are really going to be gained around and on the green in addition to off the tee. There's plenty of sand and hazards out there, but I think they're kind of being put on the back burner because they don't really play that much of a role. They play a role, but it's not really a big threat to be thinking of here. And kind of going along with the distance, I believe there are 9 par fours that are over 450 yards long since this redesign. So like you said, we lost a par five. I think scoring on the par fives will still be important, even though there is one less par five. But the par four scoring on the real long par fours, I mean, half the course is made up of par fours that are over 450 yards. So that's pretty significant. The greens are known to be very fast. They were formerly bent grass, and they are now Bermuda grass greens, and they are very fast, rock hard greens. So it's possible that some of these approach shots aren't going to be landing quite as close to the pin as people would like. So putting, gaining strokes on Bermuda, gaining strokes on fast greens and around the green for when you land on the back of the green and run over, being able to get up and down is going to be pretty important here. So gaining birdies and then being able to get up and down to avoid bogeys, I think, are some of my biggest focuses this week.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how fast they play. I know they sped them up last year for the Players Championship, but it sounded like they were probably not going to be quite at that level, a little bit closer to the you know, tour average speed-wise. Still fast, but...
Yeah, I think I agree with that because, I mean, everyone knows the PGA Championship. They're pretty much trying to make the course every year, wherever it is, as difficult as possible. Right. We spoke a little bit about the rough. I think you can what do you give your take on the rough? I know you know a little bit more about this than I do.
Yeah, so you know what we were talking about before the show is it's in my opinion you have to be really careful this week with course history. They made major changes, both in the par layout and length of the course due to that. And then they also overseeded the rough with ryegrass, and according to the greenskeeper, it's almost 100% ryegrass is what is active right now coming out of the winter, which is easier to play out of, and they're going to cut it, you know, fairly close. I think is the sound of things. So you know they've played this course in this layout one time for the Players, but the greens were really fast. The rough was really tough. That plays completely different on a long course than what I think it's going to be this week. And, you know, that's important because the big hitters have a huge advantage on a course that doesn't punish you for a lack of accuracy. You know, when you can just haul off and land in the rough and not have to worry about hitting out of long, thick rough like that. It's going to be really interesting. I don't think there's too much predictive nature in course history here. It's not completely worthless when you have a guy like Rory who's got, you know, such a history. I think you do still need to consider it slightly, but definitely be careful game log hunting this week.
Yeah, and I think what I'll add to that is if you kind of look at the 4 or 5 years previous to last year, I think it's legitimate to take a look at and consider a bit. Mm-hmm. I think I'll take it into consideration in who I'm choosing this week. I mean, I think there are some people who don't have history in the last 5 years that I still will be interested in, but just being out there and like, it's not like the whole course changed. Like it's a few holes,
right.
The par of we dropping off a par five like that. But like you said, Rory, he holds the course record. He has the single round record. He has the 4 round record. He's won here twice. I think it's safe to say that whatever conditions this course will be playing in, he's probably pretty confident with. And
right.
I guess one last thing with the lack of rough and the length and the pretty pristine and quick conditions, I think we have some consistencies from year to year, whether it's like a little slower or the rough is a little shorter. I think it can be taken into consideration, but definitely like take it with a grain of salt there and don't base everything you're doing on course history. I agree on that.
Yeah. And Rory segues nicely into the guys at the top. He's the most expensive guy on DK. He's got the course history coming off of a pretty good performance at the Masters. And then even like the course changes, I think play to his strong suits. The long par fours are something he's usually pretty good on. Yeah, they added a little sand, which let me see how he does in sand there real quick.
Yeah, I think he's
pretty good out of the sand. So, you know, that kind of thing is not going to throw him off his game.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Like, I don't have any worries about if we're just looking at Rory, thinking about the type of player he is and how he fits the course, which is obviously well, I don't have any worries about him. I think what I'm scared about with Rory is just his complete ability to turn it on and then completely off. And he's coming off a pretty good stretch here, winning the Arnold Palmer Invitational last month and then coming in fifth at the Masters. He had that pretty ugly Sunday where he pretty much just played himself right out of it. I wouldn't even really say Patrick Reed played himself into the win there. He had multiple people trying to catch up to him, and Rory just completely let it go, which is like you can't fault someone for necessarily falling behind on Sunday at the Masters, but it is Rory we're talking about. Right. And I don't know. With Rory, is it like a two on, four off type thing? I really don't know. It's hard to predict. But being the top priced guy of the week with this crazy course history, if people are going to be kind of looking toward anyone up here, I would imagine he'll be the popular pick. But it's interesting with the pricing because 11.8 is expensive. He's the most expensive guy on the slate in terms of DraftKings. And we've seen higher than that. Like, you can fit him in here. We're going to talk about some cheaper options later. So
yeah, there's definitely some values. So I think guys at the top are going to be slightly more popular than they usually are.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, in terms of like comparing this to something like the Masters, where we had a lot of these same names up top, I think the ones you got to worry about here are really like Ricky Fowler, Justin Thomas, Rory McIlroy, who are all over that 11,000 range, because that limits who you're going to put in your lineup to back them up. So you're going to have to really, if you're going to play up there, you got to choose someone up there. And right now, I guess he's the one that piques my interest the most, but I don't think that's going to be very uncommon.
Right. Yeah. I mean, obviously his distance off the tee and his approach shot distance is really playing well on this course. For him, it all comes down to the putter. He's pretty good on Bermuda greens, but any given week, I think right now he can just have a meltdown putting wise, but you can't predict that.
And that's my main worry. One other thing I'll point out is just I have been focusing on kind of three main stats so far and just seeing where all these guys line up. And over the last 36 rounds is the sample I pulled for strokes gained around the greens and strokes gained off the tee. And then I also looked at a rolling report of putting on firm Bermuda greens. So I was getting pretty specific with that one, but Rory is one of the only guys in the field. This was a pretty quick look, so I wouldn't say he's the only one, but he's one of the only ones that places firmly in the top 30 in the field in each one of those categories. So that's another thing that I really do like about him, but I will definitely say that I don't trust him week to week to week. He's definitely someone who I can see missing a cut here and there, and that always scares me.
Yeah. And, you know, they're close in price. The next guy down, Justin Thomas, 11.3. I think he's probably my preference out of the two. A lot has to do with the distance off the tee there for JT, but with a more complete game. But I think he's going to be just as popular as Rory, if not maybe a hair more popular.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I just completely forgot to say his name earlier when I was saying you got to choose kind of one of those three guys. That's four guys, and Justin Thomas is there. And I think people are going to be very drawn to him like they are almost every single week, and for good reason. Justin Thomas is another guy that if I'm going to trust someone, it's going to be him. But I personally have no problem with passing them both up here with like some of these names down just a bit below. So, I mean, Justin Thomas has had decent history here, and he's been obviously playing great golf. It's hard to really leave him out of a lineup in any tournament at this point in his career, in this season, and just everything he's been doing. So, I mean, like, the Masters was like, it was like you weren't thinking about him for a little while, and it was just because he had like not a great first round. But he's Justin Thomas, and that was the Masters. Everything else, we've pretty much seen him at worst top 20. So I agree with you, though. For a consistency and like an edge off the price, I think Justin Thomas is the way I would probably fall at this moment between those top two guys.
Mm-hmm. And like you said, you got Jason Day, Ricky Fowler rounding out the top four. For me, Ricky is always underowned for as good as a golfer as he is, you know, for some of the baggage that goes along with him. So he's a guy that you got to be careful not to ignore, especially in tournaments. Jason Day is another huge hitter, putts well on Bermuda, and he's having a pretty good season. So, you know, any of these options at the top are definitely rosterable.
Yeah, I wish I could like really add more than that, but like I love Ricky Fowler. I'm gonna play him every week that he's playing, just because like I always say that the moment he wins and he's not in my lineup, I'm gonna like really hate myself for that. So I'm gonna continue to do it. And this is it's a big price for him, especially when you're looking jumping down to Jason Day is 11-1 to 10-2. Like that's pretty significant right there. And even just looking at Jason Day's game log on DraftKings, like he is another guy who very rarely finishes outside of the top 20. And like you said, he's got the Bermuda, he's got the long ball. He lines up well with this course. It's just, we don't have anything to look at like we do for a guy like Rory. So coming off a T20 at the Masters and then a decent finish at the API, I don't hate it, especially if we look a little further back. He came in second at Pebble Beach and then won the Farmers Insurance. Like he's having a good season. He's not playing a ton and people aren't talking about him a ton, but for that price, like he would almost be my, like almost a guy I would start with if you don't trust Rory at that price range, and then you want to be different and look past Justin Thomas. I think Jason Day is a very acceptable start to start your lineups at.
Yeah, I mean, I think the collection areas here are Justin Thomas because he's the lesser of the two at the top, and then Jason Day saving you that extra $900.
Yeah, which is huge. $900 is not to be understated there.
Right, but yeah, I mean, if you're looking to win the whole thing, it's a little more risk taking Fowler on, but. You know, if the guys at the top have mediocre tournaments, he's the guy who's going to push you the farthest up the leaderboard.
Yep. And I think looking right below that, I think we have a very modest price for the Masters champion who's been wearing his green jacket around for 3 weeks now.
Patrick Reed. First look at him.
And like, I feel like Patrick Reed is a guy who is going to thrive off of, like, he's just been so, everybody's been talking about this guy for 3 weeks, and he is like such a, I feel like everybody's learned so much about Patrick Reed, and I would just love to see him go back out there and like win this week. I want to see him randomly become dominant on the PGA Tour. Like what a face to be up there, especially knowing all the new stuff we know about Patrick Reed. Like,
right. Yeah. Like he's kind of like an anti-star. So for him to be in the limelight is a great storyline.
Yeah, and it's funny because, like, back in the Ryder Cup days, like, I've mentioned this before here, like, I loved watching him on the Ryder Cup going crazy, and I feel like everybody loved that. They call him Captain America, but now suddenly we know about his estranged family and his all this Imagine Dragons BS, and, like, the fact that he plays his practice rounds alone, and, like, suddenly everyone thinks he's a crazy man and, like, has no feelings and everybody hates him, like... I don't know. I kind of like it. I'm kind of into it.
Yeah, I mean, he should do well here. Yeah, he's still got that he has he's the meltdown factor. Because when it goes wrong for him, it goes really wrong.
Oh, and that is definitely true. Like, I'm not usually one to go play someone coming fresh off a win, especially something like the Masters, but, like, he's had good course history here. We didn't play at this course last year, but he finished T12. And then before that, in his 3 years that he played here, he's gained strokes, came tied in 28th, tied in 58th, and tied in 32nd. He didn't play in 2014, but he's been hot all season. I was telling people that I liked him coming into the Masters, and the fact that I put him in one lineup paid for me, but I just don't – I don't really see him slowing down. Like, I think that weird side that we know about him, the fact that he's so introspective and plays these practice rounds alone and clearly doesn't care about anyone else or anything else, like, he's the kind of guy who's probably just focusing on his game and isn't going to change anything, and I kind of like that.
Yeah, and he's a guy I don't worry about with, you know, the spotlight on him in the time off here. Like, he still put the work in, I'm sure. He's not coming in hungover, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think nothing has changed for this guy. I think he's probably enjoying wearing that stupid jacket around, but hey, like, good for him. He earned it. One last thing on Patrick Reed. He's also got my tag for top 30 in both putting on fast Bermuda greens and strokes gained around the green. So the one thing that's missing for him there would be strokes gained off the tee, which he's not a short ball hitter. So he's clearly been keeping the ball straight lately. If he was able to win the Masters, he was not getting himself in very much trouble that week, I can tell you that. So again, back to pricing, like 9,700, he's priced less than Jason Day, Ricky Fowler, Justin Thomas, Rory McIlroy. After coming off a win at the Masters, I think you can't really overlook Patrick Reed here, but kind of the same disclaimer, in my opinion, he's kind of capable of doing the Rory and just totally imploding. So I like him, but there's always that little spot there.
Yeah, and it's going to be your last chance to play him under 10K if he has a solid week. So that's something to keep in mind if you're looking to scratch a Patrick Reed itch.
Oh, for sure.
Any what other names do you like here? We got a couple more in the nines.
Yeah, so in the nines, I think I have to mention Tiger Woods, and for me, I'm going to pass on him. I think I saw him like tweet or something that like his break was over and it was like back to the grind. I think that was sometime last week. So it's like kind of leads you to wonder, like, what were you doing the past, I guess it was only 2 weeks, but one way or another, like, he was just so overhyped for the Masters, which I completely see why. It's his first Masters back and he was playing well coming into it, but people really have to temper their expectations on Tiger. And like, I guess I got to go with the same attitude this week as I have in prior Tiger weeks of like rooting for him, but not putting money on him. I just can't justify it. Even like, this is the first time I would say his price is like pretty, you know, it's where you start to think about it. I think you put him under 9,000 and I would really be thinking about it, but 9,100, having not really been a Wells Fargo Quail Hollow guy, at least in the past 5 years, I'm not a big Tiger guy this week.
Yeah, and the driver is what's been giving him trouble all year, and you're not going to win without that, I don't think. He might do okay, but
yeah, Yeah, that's another good point. Phil, I like Phil. Do you like Phil? Yeah.
I'm a little bit worried on Phil that we're like at the front end of a Phil slump. You know, sometimes he gets into these funks. He profiles decent for the course. He obviously doesn't have the distance, but
It's like similar with Phil with his driver, where he will get into streaks where he can't hit a fairway.
Yeah.
And that's a little scary there. And he's like similar to Patrick Reed here, where I have him marked for the quick Bermuda greens and then strokes gained around the green, which is like Phil to a T there. Like it's his short game and his putting that are going to keep him in this tournament.
Right.
It's just about what he can do off of the tee, I think.
Right. Like you say that, and you know, at Augusta, it's, you know, the rough isn't hard to hit out of, so you don't get punished for a lack of accuracy unless you're like in the woods and trying to swing through a down tree like he was where he whiffed on that one shot.
Yeah. He needs to like put four rounds together in the Masters. He shot a 79 in the second round. And like, if he doesn't do something like that, I think if he has four decent to good rounds, you're going to be glad you put him in that lineup. But he has good tournament history, like Quail Hollow wise, he's done exceptional. So that makes me kind of really want to play him. I think like, honestly, starting a lineup, Patrick Reed, Phil Mickelson could be very interesting. I don't know, like, I'm not sure on ownership here, but skipping those top three or four guys and then jumping down to the two that some people might be hot and cold on could be pretty interesting here.
Yeah. You have any feel on Hideki Matsuyama? I think he could be a sneaky play this week. Anybody who looks at any kind of model coming into this, he's going to look terrible because he was playing through that injury. But he was solid at the Masters, and he had a little more time off here. So he should be coming out 100%, you would think.
Yeah, I wanted to mention him, and then I was like, all right, if I'm going to choose one guy here to pass up, it would be Hideki. He's capable of also gaining strokes around the green. Everything else is like a little iffy to me. I'm never confident in his putting, but he is coming back into form for sure. He didn't play here in the PGA Championship, or no, he didn't play here wherever it was, Eagle, whatever, last year. But he has, before that, had three outings at Quail Hollow since 2013, and all of them were decent. His most recent two were T11 and T20, so that can't go overlooked. And his last start was the Masters, where he finished 19th. So, like, we see him coming back from that injury that I don't think we need to think about anymore. He's gained strokes at the course, and I think he justifies the 9,400 price tag, but given the people that are around him, I'd rather play Patrick Reed. I'd rather play Phil Mickelson. And the last person I'll mention is Tommy Fleetwood, who I'm also pretty interested in this week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think people probably still be a little gun shy on Fleetwood, maybe slightly less so coming out of the Masters, where he had that one great round.
Yeah, I mean, Tommy Fleetwood, when I was first looking over this pricing, trying to figure out who I was really interested in up here, I looked at his name and I said, God damn it. Like, I'm so sick of playing Tommy Fleetwood and having such high expectations for him, and then him coming up just a little short or boring me just a little bit. Or he's been like right in the mix for so long after such a great start to the season. He still hasn't missed a cut. And that's kind of what I like about him. Like, one of the things I like about him is that he will disappoint, but it's not such a disappointment that he screws you for the week.
Right. Yeah. He rarely misses a cut. Like, he's going to give you a 35th and you're like, come on, man, you were upper nines. You were supposed to be top 20 at least.
Yeah. So that's like kind of the disappointment factor with him. But at the same time, he is one of these guys that might go overlooked because I think people might be sour on him.
Yep.
He has nothing to look at for the last 5 years at Quail Hollow or in this tournament. He's only 9,000. He's one of the best off the tee. In over the last 36 rounds, he's gained the most in the field off the tee, which is kind of huge to me here. And then he's got history on the Bermuda greens too, which is, scratch that. Let me see actually where he, around the green, he's 16th, what I'm looking at here, 16th around the green, strokes gained around the green in the last 36 rounds. Bermuda, not so much. He's pretty much middle of the field, not great over his last couple tournaments on the fast Bermuda green. So I guess
he's a guy who can struggle at times with the flat blade.
Yeah. But we did see him play well last week too. I want to not think too much about last week, but they were right in the mix coming down to it. They were within five coming into the last round, and I think they pretty much stayed there through Sunday. So
yep.
He's been playing, and he hasn't been playing bad. So he's. Nope. I don't think he'll hurt you.
No. All right, let's kick the eights off with Brooks Koepka, because for me at 8,600, a guy coming off of an injury with that kind of layoff is just a little too risky.
Yeah, I think I do want to go look at the one round on Thursday that we can see his own score hole to hole, the best ball round from last week. But 8,600 is a bit much to ask for someone who hasn't played in that long. And like, even right before he really took the layoff, I remember he was not playing great. You could say that's because of the injury, but since his big win last year, like he kind of like peaked and then faded away a bit. And yeah. I think he's another one of those guys that people just want to mention as like one of the greats, one of the top players, but I really don't think he's like proved himself to that point. I think people are a little too hyped on the Brooks Koepka.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like he's going to have one really good nine, like either, front or a back on one of the first 2 days. And you're going to regret fading him for a minute, but at the end of at the end of the day, Friday, I'm feeling like that's probably going to go away.
Yeah, like I could see him one of these days. He's probably going to have that round or even like that tournament that you're like, all right, now's the time. I wish I was ahead of the curve, but that's not worth the risk for me here at all. I could agree that maybe he'll string 18 holes together, but mm-hmm. I don't think it's worth it here.
All right, what about Tony Finau and his trick ankle?
Tony Finau, I like him here, 8,700. I think that's a very, very good price for him. I'm kind of up in the air with both him and Paul Casey right now. Paul Casey's at 8,900. They're both statting out well for me. We saw what Tony Finau did even in the Masters. Like, I think
really good Masters.
Yeah, and I think if I were going to lean toward one of them right now, it would be Tony Finau. And I know we haven't discussed ownership very much, but this is bringing me right back to the Tony Finau chalk. And I could see people really liking him here because people think bomber, they think Tony Finau. They think Tony Finau, they think recent history, they think rolled ankle and miraculous weekend at the Masters. Yeah. Like, things are kind of adding up for him right now, and I think he might be popular.
Yeah, he'll probably be popular. His price isn't that extreme, and those factors you mentioned are definitely going to have him at the front of people's minds.
Yeah, so I guess be careful with that. Check back.
Yeah,
but he's definitely piquing my interest. I just wouldn't be surprised if he piques other people's interest too.
Mm-hmm. Who else do you like in the eights here?
Notable names in the eights, I guess, kind of jumping down into the mid to low eights. Three guys that I'm thinking about right now, it's Ryan Moore, Webb Simpson, and Alexander Noren.
Mm-hmm.
Three guys we talk about quite a bit. I'd say if I had to choose one from this crew, it's tough. You got Ryan Moore, Webb Simpson, Alex Noren. Who's your favorite?
You know me, it's Noren.
Cheapest too.
Yeah, at this price, like he's gonna live in my cash lineups. I think he's got a great skill set for this course. He's not known as a big hitter, but he's got enough distance and just a really solid all around game. The only thing with Noren that gives me the littlest bit of pause is he's only played the course once, and it wasn't the best finish. Well, he's only competed on the course once, and it wasn't the best. So, you know, that didn't bother me going into the Masters, and then he missed the cut. So that's got me maybe a hair gun shy, but yeah, at 8,100, I think he's a great play. With Webb, you know, Webb's an interesting guy. He always shows up in models really well, and that's because he does so many things well on a golf course. For me, what you have to do is drill down and figure out, does he do what needs to be done on the course the most well? So in this case, that's, you know, you got to hit the ball long, and he doesn't really do that. So it makes him a riskier play in my book.
Yeah.
And then Ryan Moore, just inconsistency. You know, I wouldn't go near him in a cash lineup, but he's fine for a tournament for sure.
Yeah, I think I have like things I really like about each one of these three guys and kind of things I don't really like about him. I guess starting with Noren too, I was getting hot into him. I was like, you loved him every week, and I was steering clear of him every week. And then Masters came along, and about half my lineups had Alexander Noren in them. And those mm-hmm. were the half of the lineups that struggled Masters week. And that was because he, like Phil Mickelson, shot a 79 in the second round and missed the cut. The only thing was his first round wasn't too great either. He doesn't have the history at the course, but you're right. He does have some distance off the tee. He can gain strokes off the tee, and he is statting out well in terms of putting on these quick Bermuda greens. And that's the same as Webb Simpson, kind of minus the distance off the tee. I think Webb Simpson and Alex Noren are both going to make up their strokes putting. Hopefully that's what you would hope for. Webb Simpson kind of has the course history and the knowing the course and knowing the area as a leg up there. And then Ryan Moore kind of smushes it all together with a bit of complete inconsistency, and you never really know with Ryan Moore.
Yeah. I also worry with Moore that, you know, he had a good week at the Valero, obviously, and then the week before at the RBC, he was good as well. So he's trending in a direction that people are going to like, and with an inconsistent golfer, you start to add chalk on it, can be a problem.
Yeah, I 100%. I think people are going to be interested in him because of his past couple tournaments, seeing he's done okay at this tournament. Course seems to fit him well. But I think he has a bit more of a downside than the other two guys. So I think if I had to choose, I would go with Webb and Noren. With it's really tough for me, but I think Webb Simpson, with his ability to stay out of trouble and then also convert on the greens, I think I would lean towards Webb, especially in cash, because I think he's not I find it hard to believe that Webb is going to hurt you here. Noren has a little bit more of a question mark, but you could gain some ownership leverage on him, and he's only 8,100. So that would be my take on those three guys.
All right. Then last guy I want to talk about in the eights is Bryson DeChambeau. you know, he's not typically in this range where he's typically either low sevens or even sixes. But he's got a couple top fives in his recent history. So, I would expect him to be popular at his normal price. I don't know about here.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I see Bryson DeChambeau in 8,000 and I'm kind of, and then coming off two missed cuts at the tournament, like we've said a billion times, last year wasn't actually at Quail Hollow.
Mm-hmm.
I think I can take a pass on him here with some of the names we'll see in the sevens with Norton and Webb just above. We got Daniel Berger just below him, and I'm always kind of into Daniel Berger because I think people kind of overlook him a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But there is no denying that he has been playing very well lately and really overall this year. So personally, I'm probably going to look elsewhere. He does check the off the tee box there, not so much the putting or the around the greens, but I don't know. I just see him out there with that goofy looking putter.
He can struggle.
I can easily look by him this week, but I think people are going to be interested in him, and I guess I can't blame people for that.
Yeah, I'm going to wait to put him in until I get a better feel on ownership. Yeah. All right, so like you said, in the sevens, there's a lot of names here, a lot of quality names. Who are some of your favorites?
Yeah, so there are really, really quite a few here. I think I have highlighted six people priced at 7,400 on DraftKings, all of which I think are very interesting plays this week. Up top, I think you have to mention Brian Harman at 7,900, who won last year, again, not at Quail Hollow, but has plenty of history at Quail Hollow. He finished 44th at the Masters, so he made it all 4 days, but he had Friday, Saturday, not so great, strong finish. Brian Harman can hit the ball a long way. He's gained strokes at the tournament. He's gained strokes at Quail Hollow over those 4 years, 2013 to 2016. 7,900 is a good price for him. I think historically he's above that. The last time we saw him was at the RBC Heritage at 9,800, where he finished 23rd. So I guess fading him would have been the option there, but I can't really ignore him at 7,900. One other person at 7,900 is Jason Duffner, who played with Pat Perez last week, and they did quite well. Jason Duffner, I've been a little into all year, and then I got sour on him, and I think people might probably keep that stance on him and probably look past him because he hasn't done anything too notable, but he's piquing my interest a bit.
Yep.
Jump below that very closely too. Like, I've got names here.
Yeah. What about Luke List? Because at 7,400, he's one of the longest guys off the tee. He's going to be uber chalk this week.
Yeah. So Luke List kind of kicks off that $7,400 range for me. And you're right. I think his game makes sense here, and he's been having like such a ridiculous season that you just want to play him week in and week out. And then he had that off week and missed a cut at the Valero. But I think everyone kind of like saw what he was doing, and it was like, when is Luke List gonna slow up here? And that finally happened. He hasn't had like crazy course history here, but with his drives, his ability to gain strokes around the green, it's like off the tee and around the green, both going to be big for him here. And just recent form, you can just completely cut that miscut out of there. he was coming off of multiple weeks in a row. Yeah, that was busy. Like, I think his fifth week. Yeah, it was his fifth week playing straight. No, I think he might have had one round off between the Houston and the RBC Heritage. But one way or another, he'd been playing a lot, and he'd been playing a lot of good golf. And 7,400, like, he just went from, like, one of the most popular players at 10,000 at the Valero when he missed the cut. And now he's down to 7,400. I know the field has gotten a bit stronger, but, I mean, I would be pricing him a bit higher here.
What about another big boy, Bo Hossler? He's come down in price a bit.
Yeah, you know, Bo Hossler was someone I was kind of thinking may go overlooked here just with no course history, but, like, he's been playing very well, and he's got the ability. Where is he? He's pretty pretty good at putting on these greens stat-wise on the quick greens. Yeah, over to the rolling report at 7,400. His last four rounds and eight rounds putting on quick Bermuda greens. He's sixth and fifth in the field, and I think that's going to be huge this week for someone at 7,400 or at $7,400 on DraftKings. He's also been playing quite well this season. He finished second at the Shell Houston Open, T16 at the RBC, and then fell a little back at the Valero. But, I mean, considering who's around him right now, I think you could get him very, very, very low owned. Some of the other names at 7,400, Luke List, Francesco Molinari, Tyrrell Hatton, Adam Hadwin, Gary Woodland. Just above him, you got Chesson Hadley, Bud Cauley, Jason Duffner, James Hahn, Brian Harman. Like, I think people are going to look right past him, and I think he could definitely, definitely give you a solid top 20 at least at this price.
Yeah.
Anyone else? Anyone you are immediately looking at in this range?
My two favorite cash guys in any tournament they play in, Kevin Streelman and Gary Woodland, are back down in the low sevens, right where we like them. You know, there's not much buzz about Woodland coming in. He's a big hitter. I'm not afraid to use him in GPPs either. Streelman, definitely in cash. I think we've gotten spoiled a little bit with his performance recently. You know, he's been really, really good in the last couple weeks, but yeah, that'll probably make him popular. So I'm probably going to limit his use to cash lineups. But he's a decent hitter off the tee as well, and, you know, should be making that cut.
Yeah, Kevin Streelman saved me in our last DraftKings week, and I was loving every minute of it. In the Kings of the Course, he was the only guy, I think he was the only guy in my lineup that was unique to my lineup. So
yeah, he came roaring
there's
back.
Only four people. There's only four people in this tournament. So it's like when you see 100% owned, 75% owned, 50% owned, 25% owned, 50% owned, it's like, who do I need to do well this week? Kevin Streelman. Mm-hmm. He snuck by, made the cut, and then had himself a weekend, and that, like, paid for me big time. So Kevin Streelman is someone who we expect to make the cut every single week. He has also fared quite well at Quail Hollow in the past, finishing T6, T14, and T9 in 2013, 14, and 15. So even just taking that into consideration, plus his recent play in really this whole season, I'd say he's a safe option. Safe is a stretch. We know he can kind of take a turn for the worst, but I think he may be semi-popular here at 7,200, but I'd consider him a cash play this week, personally. I think I would play him in a cash lineup.
Yes, for sure in cash. I think he's going to help people fit in, guys at the top, and just, you know, people who don't consider ownership are going to really gravitate towards him being at the bottom of the sevens.
Yeah, and over his last 36 round, he's also statting out very well in both strokes gained off the tee and that putting on not putting on Bermuda and strokes gained around the green. So if he's missing greens, I guess you could be confident he's going to get up and down. And if he's gaining strokes off the tee in addition to that, he could put it all together and have himself quite a week. So I like him. And I also agree with Gary Woodland, too. I am like, I've been very, very, very not – very cautious with Gary Woodland ever since it was like Gary Woodland, Tony Finau time of like 25% ownership week in and week out. I kind of stopped playing him, but you're looking at this. He's got the course history. He seems to be coming out of that little hole he was in. So I think he's right back in play here too. And 7,400 is just that's another great price for him.
All right, and then anybody in the scrub zone down in the sixes?
Yeah, one name I want to mention at 7,100 is Jamie Lovemark. I think
He burned some people 2 weeks ago.
What did he do 2 weeks ago? Did he miss a cut?
I don't think he missed the cut, but like he was the guy that everything was pointing towards, and just had a mediocre kind of tournament where you know you expected him to perform.
I do remember that. People were expecting him to be chalk.
Yeah, the 30th. Yeah, he was chalk. He 30th at the Valero. And, you know, he was one of the better prices that week. And it seemed like, you know, the model liked him. People were talking about him. And his ownership was huge. And just had a poor start, never overcame it.
Yeah, you know what? I think he was the 100% owned guy in that competition I was just talking about. So that does make sense. And that's probably why I didn't care, because he was 100% owned and he made no difference to anything. Yeah. So that was probably the one thing I was paying attention to all week. And for some reason, 2 weeks ago now feels like a year ago after last week.
Right.
So yeah, I just wanted to mention him. He's also up there in putting on Bermuda, putting on fast Bermuda, and strokes gained around the tee or around the green. So he's someone I'm looking at. He really hasn't like disappointed too much this year, especially over the last 7 weeks. He's pretty much 6 weeks. He's finished top 30 every round. So that's a very, very good price for him there. And he hasn't had any crazy course history, but I think at that price, I think he's someone to keep in mind, right along with Kevin Streelman. Yeah, Kevin Streelman and Jamie Lovemark, probably two of my favorite low 7,000 options there. In terms of throwing some darts at less than 7,000, there's a couple names that stood out to me. Mm-hmm. At the very top, Vaughn Taylor. Mm-hmm. Vaughn Taylor is someone who's like always priced at this range, and it's always like, maybe I'll play him. And then it's like either you do or you don't, and you kind of don't care either way because he doesn't do anything too crazy. He doesn't do anything too bad or too good. Mm-hmm. So kind of if I'm looking for someone to play that cheap, he always kind of like stats out kind of decently for me. But he's also got a little bit of course history and tournament history going for him here. Someone who more and more is falling into this same like low price bucket for some reason is Lucas Glover, who another guy who doesn't have any like crazy finishes, but he's pretty consistent. He's made 12 cuts and 13 starts. Exactly. Yeah. So, and then he's got the course history on top of that. He's gaining strokes off the tee. He hits the ball a mile. I think he's a very interesting option. I think people might notice him this week. Three guys down low, I'll mention Trey Mullinax, JT Poston, and Kevin Twitt.
That's 67-66. Because he's got the, you know, the distance that the model really is going to like.
Yep. Yeah, and like, I don't know if people are going to, it being at this price, 6,800, I'm hoping people just like completely overlook him.
Yeah.
But he finished second at the Valero. He finished eighth at the Valspar, 22nd at Corrales. That was not a very strong field at all, But I mean, you can't really deny his last three starts have been pretty good. And then on top of that, he's really gaining strokes off the tee, and 6,800. I mean, is there more to be said on top of that?
Yeah.
Really, I think if you're looking for, if you're trying to fit someone in up at top or two of those guys at the 9K plus range, you could find your way down to Trey Mullinax very easily. Kevin Tway is kind of similar to me in that respect, but especially JT Poston, statting out real well here too, gaining strokes off the tee. He hits the ball a long way and then gaining strokes around the green as of late. So he's also had a pretty good last two starts in those same two tournaments, the Valero and the Corrales, 30th and a 19th. So, and he's 6,700. So if I were to throw darts down there, I think my choices would be Glover, Mullinax, Poston, and Tway.
Yeah, so there's definitely a avenue to stars and scrubs this week.
I think so. I think you definitely need to take caution with those guys down what I just mentioned there, but it's definitely possible.
Yeah, and so, you know, it's early in the week here. We're recording on Monday night, a day early. The ownership data just isn't there yet, so I'm not going to really waste any time on it. We mentioned it a little going through the show. Outside of Rory, there's not a ton of talk yet. Check back in with us as the week goes on. Hit us in Slack, and we can help you out there once we've got a feel for it. And then do you want to hit some FDDK pricing discrepancies real quick, Alex?
Yeah. So I got a whole list here. I was able to find quite a bit that kind of favored the DK side of things. I guess I'll go straight through them. I unfortunately didn't sort them by any large differences to small differences or anything. But right up top, you got JT and Rory are just flip-flopped on the two sites, which is pretty interesting, actually, considering they do have a $500 difference on DraftKings. You got Alexander Noren at 10-9 FanDuel, 8-1 on DraftKings. He's 12th top priced FanDuel, 18th on DraftKings, being favored on DraftKings. Adam Hadwin's 10-4 on FanDuel, 7-4 on DraftKings at 16th and 35, favored on DraftKings. Tyrrell Hatton, similarly, a little more, little lower priced on FanDuel, but he's 96 FanDuel, 7,400 DraftKings. It's 27th and 35th favorite on DraftKings. Go down to both Jamie Lovemark and Francesco Molinari are favored on DraftKings at 95 and 9,700 on FanDuel, 71 and 74 on DraftKings. Those are two guys I really like this week, Jamie Lovemark and Francesco Molinari. Actually, every one of these last guys that are favored on DraftKings are all guys we've talked about, all cheap guys that I'm very interested in. Kevin Streelman is 9,100 on FanDuel, 7,200 on DraftKings. That's the 37th top price guy on FanDuel, 53rd on DraftKings. Like I said, favored on DraftKings. And then you got Trey Mullinax, Lucas Glover, Kevin Tway, and JT Poston. They are ranging 83, 83, 78, 79 on FanDuel. And then you got 68, 68, 66, 67 on DraftKings. So they're all largely, that's like 61st top price guy on FanDuel, 101 on DraftKings, 81st on FanDuel, 127 DraftKings, 76 FanDuel, 114 DraftKings. So those guys are really, really favored on DraftKings, which kind of, if you're playing DraftKings, like it's makes you think about taking a shot in the dark on some of those lower priced guys. Yeah. In terms of FanDuel favoring players, Hideki is up there at 11-1 on FanDuel, 9-4 on DraftKings. It's 11-6. It's not huge. Ryan Moore is 10,000 on FanDuel, 8,500 DraftKings. That's 20th top FanDuel, 14th top DraftKings playing on FanDuel. Bud Cauley, 8-9 versus 7-7, favored on FanDuel pretty substantially. Here's a big one. Patrick Rogers, 8,100 FanDuel, 7,600 DraftKings. That's 68th top on FanDuel and 27th on DraftKings. Yeah, 27th on DraftKings, favored on FanDuel. James Hahn, also pretty large here. 8,500 FanDuel, 78 DraftKings. That's 53rd FanDuel, 23rd DraftKings. Play him on FanDuel. And one last one here. Keegan Bradley, 9,200 FanDuel, 7,800 DraftKings. 35th and 24th favorite on FanDuel.
All right, good stuff, Alex. Let's wrap up with our one and done pick, and then throw some darts. So I used Luke List back at the Valero and jinxed him into a miscut. Apologies to anyone using him. this week I'll hopefully not end up jinxing my choice. JT, there's a little consideration, I think, because he's so good. But I think I'm going to lean towards Rory. He's hot at the moment. You know, he's got everything kind of going together, and I want to get him in before it kind of falls apart for him again. Is there anybody you're interested in for the one and done?
I think one and done wise, I'm leaning towards Patrick Reed here. Catch him while he's hot. I think some of these bigger tournaments that we got coming up later on, it might catch up to Patrick Reed after the Masters win, but on a course that he's played and has fared well at, gained strokes on, Patrick Reed has been very hot even before the Masters. That's one of the things I want to stress here, is like he was on my radar coming into the Masters, and for a reason. Plus he's like he's done well at the course. He can putt on these greens. I really like him here, and I think we could see him kind of like fade away going into the season. So I feel like Patrick Reed, if you haven't used him, is a pretty decent one and done pick here.
All right, then the first dart we're looking for this week, a big hitter, since that's going to play well to the course. I'm going to use Ben Ahn. I know I've used him in this segment before at the Houston, and he was a little bit of a letdown. And, of course, he comes back at the RBC at a course where distance really is negated, and he goes and ties for seventh. So I think he's hopefully he's not following that every other trend, but I think he's got a good shot this week. He's good putter on Bermuda, and he's got the distance.
Yeah, I think he's starting out well too. I always take caution. I actually very rarely play him DFS wise, but that's why he's a dart. Big hitter wise, I'm gonna have to go with Tommy Fleetwood here. I mentioned him earlier. I like him this week, and as much as he keeps performing in a way that I don't really want to pay for him, I think he's priced appropriately here. I think he stands out at the range. I think he'll do well this week.
All right,
coming off a good week too. Yeah.
The next start we're looking for is a Carolina connection. Somebody who's gone to college in the area, has a house there, grew up there, something like that. My guy's going to be Kevin Streelman. He went to college at Duke, so that might give him a little bit of a leg up on guys who haven't spent as much time in this neck of the woods as he has.
Yep. I think we said what needs to be said about Kevin Streelman. For me, I'm going to take Webb Simpson here. Born in Raleigh, North Carolina. Member at Quail Hollow. Performed well here in the past. Clearly knows the course. He's probably more than up to date on any changes that have been made at the course. Webb Simpson all the way. I think this is why we're seeing that putting stat, to be honest. Like, he knows these greens. These are the greens he grew up putting on. And I think there's something to be said about that.
It helps being a member at a club. You're going to know it for sure.
Exactly.
All right, and then last dart is our comeback dart. I'm getting a little crazy. I'm going to throw a dart at Adam Scott. He's got the distance. He's got the ball striking. It's the short game and the putting that just falls apart for him. Nobody's touching Adam Scott this week after some of the letdowns he's had lately. The Masters. And then at the tournament he was a big favorite at, the Valero, where he got cut at the Valero. So I think people have had their fill of Adam Scott. You're going to get him at a good ownership. And it might just be that random week that the putter doesn't kill him.
The one thing I'll give you on that is Adam Scott has shown us flashes of being back, and he keeps making you think like, all right, okay, this is the old Adam Scott. Wait, never mind. So I'm not going to fault you too much, but I'm probably also going to be filing him in the don't play category. But again, that's why they're darts. Comeback wise, does Luke List count as a comeback because he's coming off of a missed cut? If so, he's my guy.
He missed a cut.
All right, Luke List, because the dude is having himself a season and he stats out here. He's got the game for this course, and I think I can lean on that a bit this week.
All right, there you go. That does it for the show tonight, guys. Thanks for being on board with us. As always, you can get me on Twitter at @roto_Wan, WAN. Alex is at Donald Remington. If you're not subscribed to the full tier on Patreon, go over there to patreon.com/lineuplogic and definitely consider it. You'll get the model as well as the cheat sheet that we put together that's going to really help you solidify some lineups and get you in the cut.
Yep, you get 24-hour access to our
Slack channel.
Amazing opinions all the time, too.
Yeah, I mean, that so much happens in Slack throughout the week. It's, you know, I feel bad for guys that don't have the time to get on there like some of us do. That there needs to be like a Slack report at the end of the day to summarize.
Yeah, especially on these Wednesday and Thursday mornings. And so there's a lot going on.
I will say one of the neat things about Slack is that you can customize notifications. So where you're specifically like at it, you know, either an at channel or at your username, you can prevent notifications for all but that. That's a good one to have left on because, you know, like if Alex catches somebody who's going to be an early withdrawal, like the week Adam Hadwin was, he put it out there. So, you know, you might have got that notification. But
yep. Yeah, it's definitely good. I'm usually on Twitter pretty hard Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So try to not miss any news like that.
All right, guys, good luck this week. Alex, I expect you to be in the Kings of the what was it called? Kings
of the Course.
I kept thinking Kings of the Fairway.
I'm still alive this week. And I plan to still be alive next week. And that's continues to be my main goal. So I will keep everybody updated.
Good stuff, man. Awesome seeing your name up there. All right. Good luck, everyone. Have a good week.
Thanks for listening. See you next week.